Explain gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Oh, look at this Sunday morning. Look at the sky. Look at this. This is what spring's supposed to be about. It's time to get out. You know, I told you, you got to get your tomatoes out. And I don't want to harangue you about it, but it ought to be evident now that it's time to get out and enjoy spring. And we're right here in the middle of it. So we got to talk a little bit about that. It's planting time. It's burning time. Isn't it, Sean? It's time to burn.
That's right.
The fields need it. The woods need it. If you see somebody out burning, you just tip your hat to them because it's that time of year. You know, I've been thinking a lot lately about spring and about my garden and about the fact that I'm having to turn it over to somebody else, which is good. It's good. And I'm giving them instructions about how to take care of it. And I think, you know, I got to tell them about the snakes. And I'm gonna write it up a little bit. And then, you know, what a week for snakes. Because no matter what side of the political spectrum you're on, you've been called a snake this week. It's just kind of hard to avoid it, right? So you got your Bernie brothers over there. Is that what they call them? Well, how do they say it? Bernie bros?
Yeah, whatever. Bernie bros, yeah.
You got your Bernie bros over there saying, you know, oh, so-and-so, she's a snake. And I got the president over here on the other hand saying, anybody who, you know, you're a snake. And I'm thinking, yeah, you know what? I'm a snake. And I'm okay with that. And you can be okay with that too, even though you're a snake. We're all a snake this time of year. You know, I think about that. I got these little snakes in my garden. It's funny. Because folks, you know how folks are. And they get all scared every time. And I got this little bitty snake. It's barely longer than my hand. It makes me feel so good to get out and play with them. I've been playing with snakes since I was a little kid. Not the poisonous ones. I don't recommend that you do that. But just the little ones out in the yard, they're okay. And, you know, they're out there eating the slugs and the snails, keeping my yard kind of nice. They're brown snakes. If you see a little snake in a yard in the suburbs of Mobile, it's probably a brown snake. It's a brown snake. And people get all panicked because they only know three kinds of snakes, and all of them are poisonous. But you know, there's a bunch of snakes here. We live in a world full of snakes. And that's the way it is. And I kind of have learned to appreciate what a snake does over time. It used to be, I'll tell you, when I was growing up, and I would get in the creek bottoms, and there would be some big old timber rattler sitting in the bottom of those creek bottoms, all wound up, and it would scare me to death, because I had heard, you know, I'd heard all these stories about snakes. I couldn't even talk. So when I got a little older, I decided, you know, I can't live this way. This is crazy. I pick up the little ones. I can learn to live with the big ones. So coming over a hill one day in the mountains of North Carolina, and I came over a hill, and there was this west-facing slope, and it was a March day. Not a lot like this day. It was warming up. The rains had receded. Ground was nice and warm, and so you know coming over that slope, you know with all that sun on those rocks, you know you're going to see one. And there she was right in front of me. I mean, just as soon as I thought it, she was right there in front of me, all stretched out on a rock. And I said, you know, I'm going to sit down next to you. So I took a rock just about 3 feet away and sat there on the rock and looked at her, and she looked at me, and we sat there for an hour. And I got up and walked away and decided, you know, we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. I see them all the time now. I see them everywhere. There's this beautiful diamondback. Boy, I hope she's still there. She's right down there at Orange Beach. Biggest snake I've ever seen. She's stretched clean across the road, right down there in the midst of all those suburbs at Orange Beach. clean across the road, the biggest snake, her head was bigger than my fist. It was just this immense, immense head. And she just sat there and looked at me. I hope she's still there. For your sake and for your pleasure, I hope she's still there. You know, snakes, it's a funny thing. It's okay to be a snake. I had a job once. And I worked for this guy. He was just about as tough as he could possibly be. He was hard to work for. He was hard to work for. And at some point I said, you know, I don't think I can do this anymore. I'm going to take another job. And it was a little too close by for his pleasure. And he said, okay. He didn't appreciate it. But, you know, he gave me this beautiful little black ebony snake. This beautiful black ebony snake made out of wood. And I thought, gosh, how does he know that I like snakes so much? I had no idea he knew this about me. It took me a couple of weeks before I realized he was trying to insult me. But you know, I don't mind being a snake. You shouldn't mind being a snake. I'm thinking about that, and if somebody calls you a snake this week, you just tip your hat to them and say thank you. I don't mind being a snake. I've been thinking about snakes this week. It's a week to think about snakes. They're going to be coming out, and you say hello to them. Be nice to them. They're not going to bother you too much. You know what? You also got to get your tomatoes out this week. You got to think about that. Let me tell you, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about how to deal with that this week. The weather is right. You don't get your tomatoes out this week because the weather's right, though. You get your tomatoes out this week because the weather's going to be terrible for tomatoes at the end of June. And so if you don't take advantage of what we have now, the best of what we have now, you're not going to have a great crop of tomatoes. The same's going for bell peppers. Boy, I hope you're out planting your corn. It's just about time to plant your beans. It's not going to be long before squash and melons are ready to go in the ground. I might even start melons in a pot now. It's so close to getting ready to put them in. It's about time to start your basil seeds. It's certainly time for flowers like cosmos and marigolds. There's a whole slew of things that you can be starting right now. Tithonias, your big Mexican sunflowers. It's time for all of these things. It's time to think about them because it's spring here along the Gulf Coast. We may have another cool spell. I can't even see it in the forecast. It's so far out that it may not happen. But, you know, these things can happen in April. So we need to talk this week a little bit about what you can do to protect your tomatoes. There's some great things you can do. We'll talk about how to do that. You call me if you have any questions. It's very simple to do. Very simple to do. When you're building your cages, you build them so that you can wrap them and protect your tomatoes from the cold winds. They don't like it when temperatures get down below about 45 degrees, and that's liable to happen again. It's liable to happen again. Very simple to protect a tomato from that. Very simple to protect them from the cold breezes as well. It's a great day for getting out and planting. It's a great day for thinking about where you are. So give us a call this morning. We'll talk about your garden. We'll talk about what you got going on, 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. And I'm already getting questions this morning. Some folks have been overwintering peppers. It's kind of an interesting thing. Who'd have thought you could overwinter peppers? So it'd be good to know a little bit about what kind of peppers you overwintered, but they'll do it. You can have peppers in your garden starting pretty soon here. We're going to talk about how to do that, what you need to get them up and going. And just generally going to have a good time on today's show. So be sure to give us a call, 251-343-0106. And we're going to talk a little bit more, too, about snakes, just because I feel like being one today. It's a good time to do it. You remember what the Bible says? It says, be gentle as doves and wise as snakes. So we're going to do that today. We're going to do that today. Who made those snakes? You tell me, who made those snakes? How'd those snakes get here? Before you curse them. We'll be back. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
To Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Through the window, by the window, that's where I'll be, come tiptoe through the tulips with me.
Oh, boy. Tiny Tim this early in the show, that's good luck, folks. That's just good luck. It means the rest of the show is going to be uphill all the way. So listen, we got lots to talk about. Sean and I want to talk more about snakes. And can I tell you, listen, let me tell you about, I've seen so many timber rattlers this past year. It's really nice. Every one of them just sit there and look at me. And they kind of, you know, if a timber rattler could roll its eyes, and they kind of do, they would roll their eyes every time they see me coming. They just think, oh, my goodness, not another one of those things. And you know, they don't want to be. They don't want you to know they're there. They don't want to be bothered. I tell you, so one time I was up at I was at Little River, which is a beautiful place in Alabama, this steep canyon with a friend of mine, Martin Vandergeesen, and his wife, Colleen. And we were climbing up those steep canyon walls. And we'd kind of gotten down in a crazy way and couldn't figure out how to get out. But we decided, okay, we're going to come up here, and we figured a way to do it. And we had to kind of crawl up over a ledge and just kind of belly up over that ledge. And we climbed up over the ledge, and we stood up on top of the ledge, and we looked back down, and we said to Colleen, aren't you coming up? And she said, well, no. And we said, well, why not? And she said, well, look at your feet. And right there on the edge of that ledge was this beautiful, beautiful timber rattler. And I mean, I'm telling you, you don't believe this, but Martin and I can both testify, and Colleen, we just bellied up over that old timber rattler, just drug our bellies across her, and she just sat there saying, oh my goodness, will these guys please go away? It's kind of interesting. They're very, that's right. Greg says they don't want to bite no nasty human flesh. They just can't think of anything worse. So it's interesting. I think we sometimes over-dramatize our fear of snakes. And if the president feels like we're all snakes, well, I'm proud to be one. I'm just proud to be one today. Thought I'd let you know that. You should be proud, too. It's not a bad time to be a snake. It's probably a good time to be a snake. So we got lots of questions. So one of the questions is, what do I do about my peppers? And let's try to keep up with that this morning. We've got you can overwinter peppers. If you know, we think so much like we live in Boston, and so everybody thinks that peppers are once and done kind of things. You know, you plant them out. End of the year, they're die because they're annuals. That's what we call them, annuals. We call them annual vegetables. And in fact, it gets kind of confusing. But you know, they're really not annuals in the lands where they grow. And on the Gulf Coast, because by the way, you may not have noticed this, but by the way, we're not in Boston down here. And we're not in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And we're not in Michigan. We're in Mobile. And we live in a fairly subtropical, verging on a subtropical climate. And a lot of us are acting as if the climate may be warming. And I don't know, but you're acting like it. And so are plants. And a lot of these plants now are overwintering. It's much easier to overwinter peppers. And a lot of us are doing it. I got a bunch of peppers in my yard. I've had peppers that overwintered for 5, 6, 7 years. Keep coming back. They're mostly South American peppers. They do real well. And Josh, that Bacatum, the Bacatum peppers like Aji Rico, which you have, and some of the others, the Ajis from South America, they overwinter really well. They're actually really amazingly cold tolerant. They'll be coming back from the roots if you've got them planted in the garden. If you've got them planted in pots, and I got a couple here planted in pots that I'm going to put back outside, they're ready to go outside. They're going to look kind of droopy. They're going to look a little yellowed. You know, what they will need is repotting. If you can repot them, they would greatly appreciate that. It wouldn't hurt to put them in a bigger pot, but you don't have to. Just shake off some of that old dirt. This is a great time to do it. Shake off some of the old dirt and then repot them with some fresh soil. They'll do much better, and they will cease to be droopy. Yes, the temperatures are going to be a little bit cool for them right now. They're going to like it a little bit warmer, particularly at night. But right now, for this next week, I think that even the night temperatures are going to be okay. We'll probably have some, if we get a cool night down in the lower 40s, you might just bring them inside. But I think the soil's going to warm up. Everything's going to be fine. Right now, that soil is probably pretty wet, is my guess. Probably a little too wet for them. And it's going to be a little bit sticky because it's begun to decompose in the pot. So the best thing you can do for those things right now is to repot them. Don't worry about fertilizing them. Just repot them in some good fresh soil. It'll probably have more fertilizer in it that the plant needs right now. But you just do that. We'll fertilize them a little later when they catch up, and they'll do just fine, just fine. Ah, look at that. Holy Magnolia at a Mississippi Green Water Snake. So great picture from Rusty over in Moss Point, who sent me a beautiful picture of a water snake. And, you know, Rusty, how do you know that's a water snake? It's kind of a funny thing, isn't it? They're out now. They're beginning to move around. And how do you know that that's a water snake and not a cottonmouth moccasin? Well, of course, if he opens his mouth and gapes at you, you know that it's going to be a cottonmouth because it's going to have that beautiful, white, silky, cotton-like mouth. But that has a great little picture there, Rusty. And, you know, I know he's right about it being a water snake because look at how long that head is. The head is not much wider than his body, and the head is very, very long. It's not that, that short, blunt-like head of the diamondback that's got those big lobes sticking out on either side of it. It looks like a green water snake, doesn't it? Sure does. And if you were a little closer, you'd see that where the eyes are set on the head is just not right. And you'd also see that the eyes are round, not slit-like, like the cottonmouth would be. That's right. So what kind of stories is Greg telling about cottonmouths? The cottonmouth will ask you for your ham sandwich sitting in a boat. Yeah, sometimes they will climb in the boat looking for a ham sandwich. There's no question. And I don't particularly want to be caught in a boat with a cottonmouth. I'll tell you, it can be unnerving. Sean, have you ever been caught in a boat with a cottonmouth?
Not had them in the boat with me, but had them just like Greg had them come up and want to hop in with me. The difference between rattlesnakes and cottonmouth. Rattlesnakes are the gentlemen and gentlewomen of the venomous snake world. The cottonmouths are the street punks of the venomous snake world, in my opinion.
I think that's true, and I think they're certainly willing to act more aggressively. And so for a while after I reconcile myself with the timber rattlers, which I did, you know, early on, I still held out the idea that the cottonmouths were out to get me. So there's this little place, Sean, over there on the edge of the Delta, right where the Black Creeks come into the Delta, and it's this beautiful place. We were looking for orchids with owl shots. One of Jim Godwin's good friends, Sean, mm-hmm. Al Schatz and I were out and we were looking for these beautiful rare orchids. And behind every cypress tree, I mean, you know, you have these dreams. I grew up, when I grew up over on Cypress Shores on Dog River, I kind of, you know, everywhere you stepped, it seemed like there was a snake. And I'd have dreams at night about everywhere I stepped. Every step I took, there was a snake, and I was stepping on it. And this was one of those dreams. And every tree, there was a cottonmouth. And every one of them just sat there and looked at me just like, oh, man, would you please go away? They never called. It was just amazing. And I realized, well, you know, I can walk through here and not get bit. I'm fine. It's fine.
You had a better group of cottonmouths than I'm used to. You had nicer ones there.
Well, they do get a little bit aggressive this time of year. I will admit, the males are out kind of, I think it's a territory kind of thing.
But think about where their territories are now, Bill, with the river flood that's going on. The cottonmouths do the only thing they can to get out of the water and get up in trees and hang on there until the flood goes down.
That's right. And I think they think boats are logs sometimes floating down, and they just they're looking for a good log to climb on, and sometimes they'll climb in a boat. So there it is. And then they'll get in the boat, and they'll realize all those ugly humans are in here, and they'll think, oh, my God, what have I done? That's the worldview of the cottonmouth. So it's good. It's better not to have them in your boat, I admit. Hey, listen, we got something big happening when we come back. We're going to talk about trees. Chris Francis is calling in. We're going to have a good time talking about trees and talking about the law and trees when we come back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. I got a beautiful picture here. I got a beautiful picture somebody has sent me of just one of the most beautiful creatures ever made. Unbelievably beautiful. A beautiful diamondback in Greene County. Really nice to see him. I don't know if you've ever seen a diamondback. And timber rattlers are awful nice, but there is something particularly beautiful about a diamondback. It's just... the pattern is just unbelievable. You can't believe it's real. It's so beautiful. Just sitting there, a nice six-footer, just kind of quietly crawled away after he had to pose for a picture. I'm assuming it's a male. I don't know why I'm assuming he's a male, but I think he is. So you know, and one of the other things we need to talk about, and Sean, we'll try to do that. We'll try to find some time a little bit more this morning. We need to talk about those indigos, and we're going to do that. Sort of the two biggest snakes in North America are the diamondback and the indigo, and there's an interesting little story between the two of them. And so Chris Francis is calling in. Chris is really... it's really nice to have Chris. I mean, Chris is sort of taken on, and I don't mean to be offensive, but to other folks, but Chris is sort of taken on the mantle of the tree guy of the Gulf Coast. I really like what he's doing. I really like how he's, he's going back to school. He's trying to write term papers. Oh, man. And not only that, but he's really involved in developing programs that help us all understand how to live with trees better. And it's a really nice thing. It's a really nice thing. And I'm always glad to have him on. He has Chris Francis Tree Service and, he does a great job. I work with him on a lot of projects. And Chris, we prepared everybody this morning by talking about snakes. So now nobody's listening. So we can talk about whatever we want to talk about.
Well, thanks for having me on. And, I say there's plenty of tree guys. There's very few tree experts. So that's where we're really, aiming.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And we talk about, I say it this way. There are morticians. There are tree morticians, and then there are tree doctors, people who can actually help you with your trees and keep them alive, and keep them from falling on your house. And we can talk a little bit about that. And it's important to know the difference. Chris is mostly one of the latter. There are trees that I would sometimes say, just let's take it in. Chris says, well, hold on. Let's think about it. Maybe there's a way to keep this tree alive. But Chris is also pretty realistic. Chris, one of the things, and I know a lot of people are going to be interested in this, and I say that one of the things I like about Chris is that he's not just out there deciding whether to take your tree down or not. He's out there thinking about how cities live with their trees in a broader way. And so when we have a tree issue here in Mobile, I go to Chris a lot and say, well, what do you think about this? Are we doing this right? Is this a good thing to do? And you know, if we're going to be a tree city, we have to start thinking about these things with a little more sophisticated eye than people in other cities do. You know, I think a lot, you know, it's other cities, you can say, okay, well, we're either going to take out all of our trees or we're just going to let our trees fall on cars and houses and people wherever it, whenever it works, you know. But we live in an area where our trees are very important to us. We also live in an area where trees protect our houses in many ways. We also live in an area where trees can do a lot of damage to our property because we live in a hurricane zone, and there are a lot of issues that can happen with trees, and we have to think about it a little more carefully, or we should. I will have to say that in my observation, sometimes we don't, and we get into big trouble when we don't think about trees carefully. But you know, one of the big issues is, so what is the protection for our trees? How are our trees protected? That's one side of the issue. And how are we protected? How are people protected? How is the city protected when things go wrong with trees? And so Chris, you set up a program. Tell me about it. It's Trees in the Law.
Yeah, and it's not just me. I don't want to take all the credit for it, but I was involved with it. And so here's what happened. I saw a speaker at an ISA event, and after 1 hour of hearing this guy talk, I said, "Man, I need to hear more. I need to. I want to hear this guy's whole story. I want to read his book." Of course, he doesn't have one, but you know, I'm like, "How can we get more of this?" And so we invited him to speak at our urban forestry conference down in Orange Beach, and that was well received. But we put together a program where he and another expert are coming to Mobile, and they're going to speak to us for all day long on trees and the law. And that gentleman's name is Joe Samnick, and Joe is probably not a household name, you know, to the average person, but most of the arborists know who he is because he's the guy that when there's a tree problem and there's a court case, a big one, you know, somebody died, something major happened, well, Joe's going to get called in, and you really hope that Joe is on your side, not on the other, because he knows his stuff, and he does a great job, but he's going to be talking to us about what happens in court, some of those stories, and what happens as an expert witness, how to avoid some of the liability. It's just fascinating. It's just really, really good information. The other one is Skip Kincaid, and Skip is another arborist that's actually running the ISA Southern chapter right now. And so he's, you know, very, very qualified, has also done, you know, a lot of litigation work. And these are guys that are going to tell you, you know, real stories about, hey, this is what happened, and, you know, this is who was found liable, and those kind of things. And so it's a program set up to where obviously arborists can attend. Well, we wouldn't turn anybody away, that wanted to come. I think anybody that came would be fascinated in it, but it's set up for professionals. It's set up for attorneys, architects, landscape architects. It's set up for, you know, engineers, city managers, somebody that's really, you know, involved with trees that may be on one side or the other of tree issues, which is, you know, all the time. And so, you know, a tree is growing on your property, hanging over my property. You know, what can I do with it? You know, can I remove these limbs? Yeah. Can I cut the roots? What happens if I do this and it falls in your house? You know, who's at fault? Is it an act of God or is it an act of me, you know, or the plumber or the electrician or whoever it is? So all these things are covered, and it's a really fascinating It's a really fascinating field of study for sure.
Yeah, so it really is kind of a timely thing. Well, it would always be a timely thing in Mobile because there are always issues coming up. You know, one of the things we've talked about, I get to talk about this a little bit, and I tree commission. We have a tree commission here in Mobile, and the tree commission is full of tree experts. And I'm not going to ask Chris to comment on this, but the tree commission is not full of tree experts. Actually, I think that now Cleve is gone. Who is sort of the dean of trees here in Mobile. He knew.
Cleve's officially retired, let his certification lapse. He's done. He's out.
He's done. it's a huge loss because Cleve kept things. I mean, Cleve provided an immense amount of guidance. Right now we have no expertise on the tree commission. And I don't say that lightly. We just don't. We have people who think they might like trees, but we don't have people who can tell an oak from a hickory. And I don't mean to be too blunt about that, but it's pretty much true. And we certainly don't know, they certainly don't know what the legalities for the city are. And the city, let me tell you something, and Chris reminds me of this a lot. The city is self-insured. And it's a great point. And what that means is that anybody who lives in the city is on the hook when something goes wrong with a tree, because that money is coming out of your taxpayer dollars. And there are lots of things that go wrong with trees in a city like Mobile, because we're sometimes we don't pay attention. Sometimes we allow trees and we encourage people to do bad things around trees, things that are going to damage the trees, because we don't know any better, because the tree commission doesn't know any better. And oh boy, am I being blunt, but it's true. So
let me interject that that is the case in most places. Now that doesn't exempt, you know, the tree commission from being better, but in most places, the tree commission or tree board is a political position, and it's not, you know, and obviously the people that are signed up for that, they have a passion, they have a love for trees, but they're typically not full of tree experts, and I'd love to change that. I'd love to, you know, to have those the panel, you know, if you will, educated and trained, you know, on trees. I'd love to have more, you know, expertise on that panel. So it's not just the city of Mobile; it's all over the place.
It is all over the place, and I think because we are we emphasize our trees so much, I ask us to be exceptional, I suppose. Birmingham, you could argue Birmingham does a worse job, and I think certainly they do. Montgomery probably does a worse job. You know, I don't know about Huntsville, but certainly there are other examples of cities that don't do their trees well. But we make a lot of our trees. We make money on our trees, I think a lot of people would say, and I think we do. And so I think we have a special responsibility. One of the really important things is that people who are in charge of making decisions about trees need to be attending these meetings and need 100%. To be thinking about them. Yep. We got to take a break, Chris. We're going to be back, and I'm going to try not to be so bad in the next 15-minute session. We'll be back.
I was raised in the country, that's a natural fact. Food on the table from the garden out back. Everyone working to make the land their own. Red clay cracking where the silver queen grows. Running with your cousins from yard to yard. The living was easy, but the playing was hard. Didn't have much, nothing comes for free. All you needed was your family. I am a country girl. I've been around the world. Quite nothing like living in the South. I wanna shut your mouth. I am a country girl. I am a country girl.
Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
I'm only happy when it's complicated.
Hey, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. It's drying out enough to do a little burning, which is kind of nice. Kind of nice, isn't it? Hey, so a lot of questions this morning, and Rita Chris Francis is on with me. Chris has been out looking at a lot of oaks here lately. And Rita says to me, Chris, hey, pollen and allergies, how long? How long, oh Lord, how long? And I'm going to say, you know what, Rita? It's got to be about as long as the oak trees bloom, because Chris can argue with me, and I love it when we argue, but it's the oaks. It is the oaks. It ain't the pines. It's the oaks. And we love the oaks, but you want to know where your pollens come, your allergies come from this time of year. It's the oaks. Chris, what are your thoughts about the allergy situation?
It could be. I think most of the allergies that you're seeing are coming from, you know, grasses and weeds and sedges and things that happen to be all coming up and producing that pollen at the same time. But, you know, you tend to blame the thing you can see. And so, you know, you look out and you figure out and you say, ah, there's the pollen. That's the one that's doing it. And, you know, it may not necessarily be what that is. You know, we see the same thing. Lichen is probably the number one. People say, this stuff is killing my tree. And it's just lichen, you know, it's just hanging out there. And so people are always blaming the thing they could see.
That's right. Well, and people don't often see the live oak flowers, but they're out there. I would say, you know, we don't have as many grasses blooming this time of year. There are some small ones, but they're not the little blue grasses bloom. But there aren't as many grasses and sedges blooming. Most of the spring wildflowers are actually insect pollinated. So I'm less willing to blame the flowers this time of year, though. Later on, it's going to be the grasses, and that's going to start, you know, the grasses that we have, the bahia and the other things, they're going to start blooming in late April, May, and June, so that's going to be a problem. Chris, we had, you know, I'm going to approach this gingerly because I said I was going to be a really nice guy this time around about things, but let's talk about trees and when they need to be protected and when they need to come out. This is a perennial issue here in Mobile, and it's something we have to deal with in one way or another. It's part of what the law is about. So I'm just going to say, because I've had this observation that over there along what is it, Three Mile Creek, in some of those areas that we're doing some major construction work around trees, because, you know, it needs to be done. We got sewer systems that aren't handling all the rainfall that manages to infiltrate into them. So we have to put in bigger sewer pipes to keep the sewer pipes from overflowing. But meanwhile, around these sewer pipes, these large water oaks have grown in, and they grow fast. They grow like weeds. And then they die, and they get all kind of problems. They have big problems. And so we're putting in these big pipes right next, within a few feet of these big trees, and that's okay, isn't it? Everything's going to be all right. Tell us it's going to be okay, Chris.
No, and unfortunately, trees are taken for granted, you know, all the time. And, you know, what happens is you damage a tree, and you leave that site, and it's still green, it's still healthy, it's still alive. And so then at some point in the future, something happens, and then it's really hard for people to understand, you know, where that came from. You know, this may be several years or even a decade later, you know, something happened, you know, and that tree fails. And they go, well, I didn't do it. I wasn't there. That was 10 years ago when I was on that project, you know. And so, but realistically what happens, especially species, you know, like the laurel oak and the water oak, very susceptible to decay, fungal problems. And so, you know, once you cut a root and then decay works its way into that root and it works its way into the trunk, or you wound it, you hit the side of it, cut a big branch off, whatever it is, you know, when you create that wound, you're going to create a path for that fungal pathogen to enter the tree, and it really creates some problems. Now, sometimes you just by cutting the root, just you're close enough to it, you cut into that structural root plate, it doesn't have enough to support it, to anchor it, to hold it in place, and it doesn't take very much for the tree to come over. And, you know, I hear it all the time. People say, oh, that's an act of God. Well, it's not an act of God. That's an act of Robert. It's an act of Tim. It's an act of, you know, the guy on the backhoe there. Right. And so I do think that's a big problem that I see all over the place. And I tell people, you know, don't do it half-heartedly. You know, if you like the tree, if you want to protect the tree, you've got to go all out. You've got to incorporate an arborist. You've got to incorporate protection. You got to know where to protect, how to construct things around it. If not, don't just tie a ribbon around it and say, hey, we like this tree, don't remove it. You know, and then you have people, you know, dumping things on it, driving over the roots, compacting the soil, trenching through roots, you know, cutting limbs off, running into it, things like that. So a lot of those trees do not survive. Now, you get an anomaly every now and then. But a lot of those trees don't survive, and now you've constructed your project around this tree that has to go. And not only is your project constructed in a different manner than it would have been if that tree wasn't there, but now you've got to figure out how to remove this tree, you know, from over the top of your new building or house or whatever it is. And obviously right. the cost is really going to increase with that. But there are ways to protect the trees. Sometimes it just makes sense. You know, you like this project that's coming through, putting new sewer lines in. A lot of those trees, they just need to go. And you know, I don't want to see a tree go unnecessarily, but I also don't want to see somebody incur such a liability, you know, by leaving a tree there just for the sake of leaving a tree and then abusing it and then having it fail and land on a playground or land on an apartment complex or, you know, somebody. And what would result from that? So, it's a problem.
Yeah, and that's one of the things. So, you know, we're cutting the roots on the side where the pipes go, and the apartment complexes, nice apartment complexes, and the playgrounds are on the other side.
Yeah.
So what happens with these water oaks when you cut, when you're cutting so close to those roots, if we get a mild tropical storm, we could see those trees fall. And where are they going to fall? They're not going to fall where the pipes are. They're going to fall back on the buildings. They're going to fall on the children.
they're typically going to fall away from those cut roots because the roots are holding in tension and not in compression. And so, that's really bad. They're going to fail away from that. Of course, on that site, no matter which way they fall, there's something to hit.
Target. Yeah, that's right.
Not to take it lightly, you know, we don't want anybody or anything injured, but that's just, you know, when we're looking at risk assessment, we call those targets and they have different values.
Yeah, we're coming up on this hard break. We got to go to the news, which is good news, I'm sure. But we're going to be back. Chris, thanks for talking with us this morning. It's good to hear from you. I hope y'all remember that law course. We'll talk about it more when we come back.
How the weather in the Delta, how the food tastes in your mouth.